So welcome everyone to this edition of Happier Me Live. And today we're going to talk about how to communicate with kindness. And to explore this with me is my guest, Martha Van Dam. Martha is an old friend and a psychotherapist and counselor based in Florida in the United States. So Martha, welcome.
Thank you. You know I'm always glad to be here, Manoj. Always so glad.
Yeah, and I love your generosity of spirit, you know, how you kind of give of your time and just do this for the love of the world, which is what we're doing it for, really. Because on this call and around the world, we are the same human being, all of us, and we can all apply our intelligence collectively to this question. And each of us has something to contribute, and all we're doing is opening that discussion up. So, Martha, let's get started. My first question is, why should we bother?
And I know the answer to that because we've talked about it. But as you brought up the percentages, that 85% of workplace relationships have some sort of conflict and 50% of marriages break down. There's so many percentages that show us that there is so much discord in the world, and kindness can play a role in helping minimize or heal or make better those amounts of discord.
Yes. We humans are just not good at relationships. No. All the stats show that. And it's because we haven't, I think, been taught the art of relationship in education anywhere. We're just thrown in at the deep end. But I came across this amazing stat that 49% of couples in the United States are in counseling or go through counseling at some point in their lives. And by the age of 14, this is another indicator of the amount of conflict there is. 46% of children in the UK are not living with both their natural parents, which is not a judgment, but just to indicate the extent to which relationships are in conflict and the extent of heartache all that causes. So if we could learn to communicate with more kindness, maybe we could reduce this conflict. And how could communicating with kindness help, do you think? Let's talk about some practical ways it could do that.
Well, first of all, if there's kindness in the connection between two people, they're not as likely to get triggered, to get upset, to fire off. If there's not as likely, it doesn't mean it won't happen, but it helps reduce some of that measure of conflict in a relationship. And not all conflict is bad, but it can reduce the intensity of it.
Yes. And that whole tit for tat behavior, you know, which is, as you say, which comes from being triggered. And I think kindness is the foundation of a loving relationship, brings people together. I mean, after all, the word love, I think, is misused, but you can't abuse the word kindness, you know. If you have kindness in your relationship in every aspect of it, then you're well on the way to building the foundation of a loving relationship. And if I'm kind to you, I think it makes you feel valued too, right? If I've gone out of my way to do something kind.
Absolutely. I think maybe an easy way to see it too is to think of what the opposite looks like. So when someone is being unkind, we feel like we are not valued. We feel pushed to the side. All manner of things we can feel if someone is being unkind.
Yes. And professionally, it makes a huge difference because people are much more likely to say yes to you when you've been kind to them. So when I was working as a spine surgeon for 25 years, anyone who asked me for anything, you know, swap a rotor, do an extra on-call, cover this, I always said yes, if I could. And I think that sows the seeds so that when you need help, then people are much more likely to say yes. Because if you've not been kind and there's a slight resistance or irritation, then people are not going to bat for you. And that goes for leaders too, right?
Absolutely. I'm sure in your world, in many of these people's worlds, sometimes we have to deal with people. I know someone was a coach, someone else is a nurse. Sometimes we have to present information that may be difficult or maybe hard to hear. And just because it's painful or even if it's truthful, and if we can present that in a way that's kind, then it's going to be accepted so much, generally accepted so much more readily.
Yes. And the other number one problem we're facing in the world is loneliness. The numbers are really high, like 60%. And 30% of those people are in marriages who are lonely, see? And I think one of the reasons is there isn't that depth of connection. And there isn't that depth of connection. One is, of course, communication, which we can talk about, but it's also about kindness, you see. If there isn't that kindness in the day-to-day functioning of our lives, and it's not foremost in your mind as the number one priority for you're not going to have relationships with depth. You're going to feel lonely.
It's
You're
true.
going to find yourself isolated, and your relationships are going to suffer. So kindness is the glue that holds our relationships together, and we know it's the foundation of our long-term happiness, isn't it, really?
Yes, if our relationships are broken, it does end up being a lonely existence.
Yes. Now, we also said being kind doesn't always mean not speaking the truth, and
No.
being and having those tough conversations. So, do you want to expand on that, Martha?
Sure, we talked about it is not kind to hold back the truth. You mentioned in a relationship that if we don't speak our truth or speak the truth as we know it kindly, but speak it, then the other person is at this ridiculous disadvantage. How do they know what we need? How do they know what the problem is if we genuinely don't tell them? But if we tell them with harshness and without kindness, then that is going to affect the way that they can receive it. But not speaking up is not a kind thing.
So we make that mistake, don't we? We think keeping quiet and not telling people things they may not like is being kind to them. But so many people spend 20 years together not wanting to be in that relationship, and then it gets too much, and then they offload, and then it's too late. Whereas if
Yes.
they'd had the courage to be honest and kind in that communication, really early on in their relationship, maybe things could have turned around. And by the way, that's true for professional relationships as much as interpersonal ones, right?
It's that age-old question of what is kindness? And kindness isn't necessarily not saying the truthful thing or not saying the hard thing. It's doing it in a kind way, but it is not kind to not be truthful.
Yes. Susie's put in the chat that the real tragic reality is that some people are simply unkind by nature of their personality and their formative experiences. Despite the best efforts, these people seem unable to grasp the notion of being kind. We're going to come to that, Susie, because we're going to talk about, actually, it leads to my next question, which is what gets in the way of being kind? You can see that behavior right from the beginning in 2-year-olds, when you snatch a toy from somebody or so what gets in the way? Let's explore that, Martha, because I think if you ask anybody, do you think being kind is important? I don't think anybody will say no. And if you
Sure.
say to somebody, do you want people to be kind to you? 100% of the people will say yes, right? So what gets in the way of being kind? Let's explore that. Why don't you start?
And I would say the short answer is our fears, but there's so much more to that. Our fear of being judged, our fear of not appearing the way we want to appear, just so many fears that we may have internally, whatever those are. I like to tell people that when they're communicating with one another, they're doing one of two things. They're either reaching out with a connection, and there's always kindness involved if there's some sort of connection, or they are trying to protect themselves. So they're trying to connect or protect. And if we're protecting ourselves, then kind of all bets are off as to exactly what that communication is going to look like.
Yes. Okay. So we're protecting ourselves. We're afraid of being hurt, perhaps.
Yes.
You know, that's the
Yes.
number one fear we all have, right? Maybe also in an interpersonal relationship, it's not realizing the importance of it. Not realizing that kindness is the only glue that's going to hold your relationship together and help it flourish. the other person isn't there to make your life better. That's what all of us get into relationships with, that idea, you know, oh, this person's there to make my life easier or better in some way. And it's not personal, by the way, it's just the way the mind is wired. I think we're also judging people constantly, aren't we? So if someone
Yes,
is slightly different to us, doing something that we wouldn't do,
and on some level, we know, yes, Manoj, we know that we're doing that. And so then we expect it of others.
Yes.
So we're on guard to the person if we're connecting with. We fear that they may be judging us. And suddenly it's more difficult to be kind.
Yes.
We
so
don't feel
often
safe.
Now I'll just catch myself, you know, with family and friends, wanting to make a comment and then just pausing and asking. Because that's the automatic response from my mind. You know, why are you doing this and why is that? Just asking, hey, is that really kind? Do you need to say that? You know?
Right.
And I think just asking that question and pausing can make all the difference. And the reality is we don't pause, do we? We just kind of on this automatic reactive, our mind is just an automatic reaction machine, if you like. I mean, the best way to put it. Okay. If we are suffering, we can't be kind, can we? Of
Oh,
any,
so
I use the word suffering in the broadest sense. And I think Susie hinted at that too. Or Jenny said our life experiences.
Our life experiences, that's a good point, Susie. And I think too, our life experiences, some of them can be incredibly painful. And we almost have to be intentional about determining what do I want those life experiences to do within me, because people can take harsh experiences and can become very kind and soft and compassionate toward one another, or those same experiences can have them end up being bitter and harsh and angry. And it's an intentional determination of what do I want to do? Who do I want to be? What is living in my integrity and what does that look like? And am I intentional in my life? And then we have to then tamp down that tendency to protect ourselves again.
Yes. As you were saying, you know, there's so much suffering in the world. 80% of people say they're stressed. 35% are anxious. About 30% are depressed. And almost everyone's comparing themselves with somebody and they're feeling less than others and all of that. With social media, that's exploded. So if I'm unhappy, if there's a fire in my brain, all I can focus on is that fire, my own distress. I have no ability, firstly, to be aware of what other people need. But much more important is I'm more likely to react. And it's a form of release. I talk to young people. I say, why do you bully others? It's a release, you see? And the real challenge of our own humanity is, even if you're suffering, to rise above that and be kind, right? You know what I mean?
And we
Otherwise,
see people who can do that. Who is the nurse here? Susie is the nurse. I know for a fact you have to have seen, as you're working with different people in the hospital or in clinics, you see people who are injured or sick in some way. Some of them can be appreciative and thank you so much for taking care of me. And others just snip and snap and demand. It's interesting to see the difference, isn't it? They're all suffering. But what comes out of that person in that suffering can be so very different.
Yes. So to be aware of our own suffering, because everyone suffers to some extent, and then to be aware how that suffering should not translate into, you know, or into our behavior and the way we communicate with people, to rise above that if we can and still be kind. Because this is the problem that happens with people going through a mental health challenge. Not only are they suffering, but their relationships suffer because they've forgotten how to be kind.
Exactly. And Manoj, I think if we are aware of it, our society actually teaches us to pay attention to ourselves. There's a lot of teaching. I know when I had my cancer, people would say, oh, this is the time to focus on you. And it really didn't seem to, from the teaching, it didn't matter how I would respond to other people. And from my experience, my cancer affected my husband and my mother and my sister as much as it did me, just in different ways. And for me to have said, this is all about me, would have been wrong, and it would have hurt everyone around me, and ultimately it would have hurt me as well. I found that it was very important that in the worst of some of my painful suffering, to be kind to the people around me, because they were suffering too, just in their own ways.
Yes, it requires this awareness, you see. First, the importance of kindness, and then an awareness of how we are behaving. So, self-awareness, I think, is the key. Without it, you can't even begin to be kind because
A
your mind
hundred.
automatically isn't kind. The way our mind is wired is not, I mean, there are very few people who are naturally kind. It's a skill that we have to kind of develop and learn. And I think it comes from not questioning ourselves, you know, not having that ability to question our own thoughts and beliefs and feelings and all of that. Okay. All right. So let's move on now and talk about listening, because listening with kindness is a really, really important skill. You want to get the ball rolling on that one.
Sure, we do this in a counseling office, and you try to teach our couples and our parents to do the same thing. So it's that active listening that we talk about, which is looking at someone. In our day, with everything so busy, it means put down the phone and leave the remote alone. Look at the person that you're speaking with. That's just number one. And then I think listen to be with curiosity. Listen to hear what you can hear and what you can learn, not what you can say back. Listen and absorb. And then if the conversation stop, the person stops speaking and you're not ready to speak, that's fine. Take a breather. Think about what you want to say a minute. But don't be listening just so you can jump in a moment with your point.
Yes.
So the eyes, the ears,
Yes.
curiosity.
The Lakota tribe in North America, I love this story. The Lakota tribe, the North American Indian tribe, they had a tradition where if somebody was speaking, there would always be a pause after they had spoken, finished speaking. And only then would somebody else come into that conversation. So when there's that pause, people feel listened to. So many times when I was working as a surgeon, people would come from around the country with terrible problems. And I would just sit and listen. And the thing, and I'd say often, I can't help you, sorry, you know, but they'd say, it's the first time somebody's actually sat and listened to me properly. And I think that's a kindness that we can offer other people. It costs absolutely nothing.
I
Okay,
find the
this.
same thing with my people, Manoj, who come into the office. They've got some sort of trauma, some sort of problem they're dealing with. Genuinely, the first thing I absolutely have to do is just listen, just hear. They have to feel as though they're heard. And once a person feels like they genuinely have been heard, then they're open to all manner of moving forward. But until they feel heard, they are absolutely not open to it.
And if you interrupt somebody in their flow, have you noticed that when people are talking to you, they have a story they want to get off their chest? You just have to let them do that, whether it's a close friend, a child, or a parent, partner, it doesn't matter. The other thing that I found really helpful is to pause, and instead of saying something about what I think about what they've said, is to ask a question about what they've said. And for me, that is just a rule I follow now, if I can, if it's appropriate. And that really makes a difference, makes people feel listened to and heard.
Yes, I find too that if I can ask a question, ask more of a clarifying question, just ask them to say something that helps me understand more, that gives them a chance to explain it further and even think about what they're really thinking, to get their words better together and give me more if I continue to ask questions.
I like that. You told me once you had a phrase you use, which I liked. Well, help me understand. Isn't
Oh
that the one?
yes, help me understand. I think that's so much better than why. if we end up, I don't know, my husband asks me to do something that does not make sense to me. And if I say to him, why do you want me to do that? That will feel like I'm attacking or questioning. But if I say, help me understand what's in the back of your head. I know you're thinking something, help me understand. That does not feel like some sort of attack. And I'm going to get a better response.
There's just a few comments in the chat I'll bring up. Vaishnavi said that our upbringing from our parents and siblings and peer groups determines how kind we are. And maybe that is true, because you see, a lot of young people are growing up without any kindness in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Either their parents are just unhappy, or they've part of social media, which is toxic, or in school now, people are just so mean to each other. You know, it's incredible.
Now that is such a good point, Manoj, such a good point. I talk a lot about the accent of relationships. You know, we have accents. As we speak here today, we have all manner of accents with our language. Well, there's also an accent of relationship. And those are the accents that we pick up just in our families of origin. So whether we respond with sarcasm or with put downs, if that's what we learned in our family of origin, it becomes the accent that we use in our adult connections. Now, if you or I decide that if we decide we want to learn another language, if I decide I want to learn French, I can learn French. It's going to take hard work. It's going to take focusing. It's going to take thinking about it, and I'm going to have to practice. And it's the same way with learning an accent of relationship or accent of communication. It takes hard work. It takes focusing. It takes intentionality, but it will happen.
So do you think that could apply to being kind too?
Absolutely.
That it takes focus. It takes hard work. It takes practice, you know,
and
it
maybe
requires
more
you
so.
To prioritize it, right?
Absolutely. And more so for those people who did not grow up in a household where that was the norm.
Yes.
Because they're having to do something that's out of their normal accent. They're having to learn a new language. But once they do, we can all learn it.
Yes. The thing is, take the analogy of the language. What's going mm-hmm. to make me want to be kind? You see, once I know it's something that's good for me, that's mm-hmm. what I've got to realize.
Mm-hmm.
Being kind to others is the number one thing I can do for myself. Mm-hmm. Whereas our mind assumes it's something we're doing for other people.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's the number one thing you can do for your own happiness, because that's the glue that's going to hold your relationships together, right?
Certainly, Manoj. Yes, absolutely. And I think when we... then this comes back to our relationship that we have with ourself. When we are more and more kind with ourself, it makes it more natural and easier and something that we want to do to be more kind to someone else. And it comes back to that interpersonal relationship we have just with ourselves.
Yes, yes. Susie talks about the pressure of time.
Mm-hmm.
I think listening is a quality of being. It's not just the technical thing of nodding your head and making eye contact and not picking up your phone. People sense your energy, you know. They sense your goodness. They sense whether you're really interested in them, whether you're curious.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, nonverbal communication is 80% of communication, depending on what number, whether it's 60 or 80, who you believe. But it's really, really high. So you can't fake active listening. This is what I mean, you know, and mm-hmm. as you say, it's something you've got to practice and become good at, like a skill, and it's going to really enhance your own life. That's a really important lesson, I think, for us all to learn. And as you say, then it's like learning a language, a new language of kindness in the world. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's move on to talking about the other thing is to be sensitive to other people's emotional state, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not something we are sensitive to quite often. Do you want to explore that a bit more?
Ooh, okay. Well, that really does take some intentionality and being aware of where we are, being aware of what's going on in us, because being tuned into another person's emotional state is a very intentional thing. And so it's talk a level of really wanting to have good relationships, but tuning into other people's emotional states, I would say, yes, we want to use all of the skills that we've learned, all of the experiences we've had in life to be tuned into what's happening in front of us. But then another thing I think is really valuable is simply to ask. Be what, how are you, how are you feeling today? You've had a lot on you. How are you holding? One of my favorite questions that my husband will ask me is, how are you holding up? And I just love that within that question, there's an understanding of you might be having a hard time. So, but asking people, and then I don't know, you're coming home at the end of the day and you know you're in a cranky mood, let your partner or whoever is in your home, let them know, hey, I'm at about a three today of if 10 is good, I'm at about a three coming in, so they can be aware. So that awareness goes both ways. We need to be able to share, know where we are and share that so the other person knows and they're not caught off guard. But then we want to be observant and ask. I would say those are the two pieces that are important about being aware of an emotional state. And this, we didn't use this word, but we talked about it the other day, Manoj, and it's that word about assumption. If we're not careful, we are making assumptions about where other people are, and we're not aware that we're making assumptions, but we are reacting with our assumptions. And so being aware that we are assuming and then assume that there are things we don't know that we want, that we need to know.
You raise a really good point, which is firstly, we believe what we think is true, and we assume we know what other people are thinking as well. And then we are reacting to that, you see. And just to have a bit of humility and realize, hey, what I'm thinking may not be true about this person or about myself. Or what I'm assuming about this person may not be true. And particularly in professional environments, I think in a personal environment, you're more likely to be able to tell your husband, look, I had a bad day or whatever. But in a professional environment, we're just not able to do that, you know? So to be able to sense, be sensitive and to ask yourself, okay, what's this person not saying? What could they be going through? And so on. Just asking yourself the question. And for example, you know, like Susie, if you're in a busy professional environment in the army or whatever, you're meeting lots of people every day. Carrying that sensitivity with you, I think, is so useful.
So, Minaj, I had an experience just a few weeks ago. We were in another town for a funeral, and it was one of those funerals where you go from thing to thing to thing. And we didn't know the town at all, or not very well at all. And when I looked up the place we were supposed to be going next, it was not coming up well on my GPS. So we're following a neighbor to get to the right place. And so I'm thinking we've got to stay right behind them or we're going to get lost and we won't know where we're going. So we are following close behind and we get stopped at a red light. And to my right, my husband's driving, but to my right, there's a gas station and a truck is trying to come out. Like you, Minaj, you said you are kind. If someone wants something, if you can do it, if it's in your power to do, you do it. Any other time, I would have let that truck out, or we would have let that truck, go ahead. But this time we didn't. We had to stay right behind our friend, or we would be lost and we wouldn't know where to go. And so I look at that man, and he's saying something, and he's got this angry look, and he's waving his hands. And I don't know exactly what he was thinking, but he looked very put out that we were not letting him come in. And in that moment, I thought, he's looking at me. He has no idea that I'm kind of in a pickle and I'm trying to get where I need to be. And he's making an assumption of me. And he knows he doesn't know me. He doesn't know normally I would let someone out. And then I thought, how many times do we do that? We see someone doing a thing or saying a thing or using a tone, and we have no idea what really is going on in their world. So there's this assumption that we may have. And I thought, how many times do I do that? That has helped me to be aware, try not to, just to be aware of my assumptions. And then to say, I assume there's something going on here that I don't know about, and I'm going to give them grace.
Yes. So Laurie's mentioned the word compassion, and maybe you can expand on that, Laurie, later. But having the sense of compassion and realizing that everyone's suffering or going through a hard time to varying degrees, and today might be a particularly tough day, and how can we respond with our own compassion. And if you don't have compassion, you can't have kindness. You know, it's that sense of goodness that you carry with you. But Jenny raised a point earlier, which is that often people are kind to others because they want something back from them. And that's just the way the human mind is wired. You know, it's wired in self-interest. We're always acting out of that self-interest. And how can we get past that, really, to be more kind? Okay, so let's move on. And also, let's talk about speaking now with kindness, Martha, because that's such a big piece, right? Of how can we speak with greater kindness? You want to get the ball rolling on that?
Well, I would think immediately again with intentionality and speak with awareness of to whom we are speaking. Technically, softness, tone. If you see a conversation that that the tensions are rising a little bit, literally by intentionally bringing down your tone, it can change the tone of the whole conversation. Instead of the feeding on, we can do some of the bringing down. And people tend to respond to that. People, if someone is yelling at you and you get quieter, they also tend to quieter and more slowly speaking. They also, you'll see it, that they'll tend to read that energy, not even realizing that's what they're doing, but they'll tend to mirror some of that energy. Yes. That can take some of the pressure out of a conversation.
Yes. I think for me, the biggest question is, do I need to say something at all? Quite often in a lot of situations, I find keeping quiet is often the kindest thing to do, you know, because otherwise you'd be ending up saying something critical or, you know, and you realize the other person's not looking for a response. They're just looking to say something, offload, whatever, and might be irritated. Then, of course, to ask, is this the right time to say it? Is it kind? And quite often, I read on one of our calls here, actually, somebody said something beautiful, which was with children, or it could be with anyone. Do you want me to say something right now, or do you just want me to listen? So that was, I thought, a great question.
Good point.
You know,
it's a very good point.
Or with my sons, for example, I've learned now to say, I need to say something to you, which you may not like. Is this a good time to say it? And quite often they'll say, Dad, not now, maybe, you know, later or whatever. And that's fine.
Right. Sure. Yeah, they don't want to hear the hard thing. But I do something similar even with my clients when the thing that I need to say is going to be difficult and I need to say it. And that's even preface that with a little bit of, okay, now I'm going to have to say the hard thing now. And then people are a little bit ready and they also can feel that you're not trying to come at them with something difficult. They can feel that I'm trying to be kind here and helpful. I'm trying to be helpful. I think it's important to, in order for us to do all of these things, to think about what we're going to say, we have to slow down our conversations. And, you know, you say that to me, Manoj, because I tend to speak quickly. You say, slow down. There will be people here whose English is not their first language. Slow down. But in all of our communications, maybe it's helpful if we can slow down a little bit, because if we have slowed that process down, then we have time in our minds to ask your question, do I need to say it? Or another one is, why? Why do I want to say this? I think the why question is important for me. It helps me. Am I trying to say this to get my point across? Am I trying to say this to get my way? Why am I trying to be helpful? What is my why? And that can help determine if I need to say this thing or not.
For me, pausing before I speak, I think that's really, in that pause, there's a chance for intelligence to operate. And often the question I'll ask is, how is this going to be received? Because when you ask that question, just how is it going to be received, then you've got chance for your intelligence to start acting. Otherwise, you know how our mind is automatically critical, right, of other people and what they're doing. And particularly parents with children, It can be just a stream of negative criticism all the time. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? You know, and so on. Right? Okay.
So Susie mentioned that business of bringing the tone down, that the opposite can be true, that sometimes if you're being very calm, that can wind the other person up more. And yes, if they want to see you get wound up and you're not, or they want to push a point and you're not, that's true. They yes. can't. Yes, it's exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. What about the people who talk all the time, Martha? The party bore. Are you the party bore?
Those are hard.
How
Those
often
are
have you met
person?
People who just talk all the time and never ask you a single question about yourself?
Yes, no, that is not enjoyable to be around. And no, you don't feel, why are you even there? A part of the communication if you're not allowed to speak a word. You're kind of useless at that point.
Yes. So quite often when I'm with people who disagree with my politics or whose politics I disagree with, etc., rather than jump into that to start with, you know, American politics, as you know, is a good example. There's just, but I'm sure it's the same everywhere in the world. We could just try and experiment and find something in common first.
Right.
You can
And they're
always,
always
as an exercise, find something in common with people, right?
I just can't imagine a case. I started to say there always is. That's who knows. There might not always be the case, but I can hardly imagine a case where we wouldn't be able to find a commonality.
Yes. And if you do find yourself on opposite sides of an argument, I love the comment you made, which was, help me understand why you are pro-choice, pro-guns, pro-this politics or pro-that politics, whatever it might be, you know?
Right. Again, it takes away that why. Why do you think that? And it turns into a, there's something very humble about help me understand.
Yes, yes. Okay. And so we've talked about listening, we've talked about speaking, and the other key part is understanding with kindness. Because our minds tend to make those negative assumptions, judgments all the time, when less likely to be generous when we think about people.
Yeah. It goes back to our brains having a bent toward protecting ourselves. And yay, that's what keeps us out of the street and keeps us from running into a street and getting hit. And it's what keeps our doors locked. Or that's a wonderful thing that our brains are protecting us. But they carry it too far sometimes. Our brains can see danger or threat where there is none. And so then we respond to what our brains are perceiving as, you might be judged, you might be abandoned. And then we're have a difficult time being kind. So I think that it can be very, but again, it goes to this knowing what's happening inside our heads, being aware, being intentionally aware of what's happening inside our minds.
I loved your analogy of learning a language. It's almost like we all need to learn this new language of kindness. And one of the things is to look at people with generosity, with a positive attitude, like rather than be critical, which our mind is naturally critical of people, because being critical boosts our own ego, right? I am better, you know, I'm comparing myself with you and I am critical of you, therefore I'm better. And it's an unconscious process, but it just massages my ego a little bit, you see. Whether I express my criticism to you or not is different. But if in myself I can develop a habit of being more generous in the way I look at you and think about you and so on, that will then translate into kindness.
And I would say, Minaj, a good way to start that is to make an intentional habit of, like you mentioned earlier, giving it a moment before you speak. Because in that moment, and that can create a little space in our head to be able to give that person grace or goodwill or generosity. But there must be that moment of a little space in our head, or we will snap into an immediate reaction.
Yes. And the space comes from having a mind that's quiet. And I'm going to show you around the Happier Me app and all the exercises we have for a calm mind. But I'd like to pick up on this point Susie's mentioned, which is we should be teaching this stuff in schools from a very young age. And I want to share with you a conversation I had with an 8-year-old girl called Sarah. and her video and her conversations on the app. So please have a look yourself directly. So I said to her, I said, suppose someone's calling you a bad name in the playground. How are you going to react? She said, like what? I said, like someone calls you a pea brain. She's only 8, remember. I said, how would you react? She said, well, I know I'm not a pea brain, so I wouldn't get upset. I said, what else would you do? She said, I would realize the other person is suffering. And that's why they're calling me names. And I would go out of my way to be kind to that person. Otherwise, they're just going to pass that suffering on to other people. This is an 8-year-old, by the way, okay, unprompted. And I said, so what would you do? She said, I'd say, do you want to be friends? You know, shall we be friends? Because if we don't, so our kindness, you see, can not only help our relationship with each other, but it can, because it eases somebody else's suffering, it stops them from hurting other people. So it has a ripple effect way beyond the immediate interaction, you know, we might be having. I mean, all of us remember, you know, for 30 years, my father was a physician. He was a chest physician for 60 years. And he taught me only one thing, which I carried through my career. And I then passed it to all the trainees I had. And they all say, oh, yeah, they used to call me Mr. Krishna. I remember that, Mr. K, you taught me that. And they teach it to their trainees. And the simple thing my dad taught me was the only thing your patients will remember is your kindness. So it's the only thing people will take away from being with you, or the memory of you is whether you were kind or not. So it's such an important skill all of us needs to learn. Okay, so my last question, Martha, and then we're going to just show people quickly around the app, and then I'm going to open it up for everyone's comments, is what does kindness look like? It looks like, you know, as you talk, you mentioned tone. What else is involved? It's a softer tone, maybe.
You think a minute. We mentioned earlier this business of looking attentive, listening. That's what it looks like. It looks like someone genuinely cares. So what does it look like if someone cares for you? They are looking at you, they are tuned in, they are asking questions, they are listening. If help is needed and they are capable, they try to be supportive. But sometimes being kind just means being able to sit with a person in their difficulty, whatever is their difficulty, just being with them. It doesn't necessarily mean all kinds of even wisdom or just saying the right word or making someone laugh. It means I will be with you. Whatever this is that you're dealing with, I will be with you. You mentioned it's a way of being early when you were talking about some way of being. It's just that way of being exudes itself from a person.
So we can be kind without saying anything. The energy we carry with us of goodness, that communicates itself to people, whether we say a single word or not. You know, like often when people are suffering, some people say, well, I didn't know what to say, so I didn't go and say anything. Well, you don't have to say anything. You just have to be present, hold a hand, you know, or and so on. So there's so much that can be done. And I'm sure we've just touched the surface of it, and I'm looking forward to everyone's comments. But let me take a moment and show you the resources we've created on the Happier Me app, which can help with all of this. So this is the app. It's on the desktop and on the phone, and it's free to download. There's a 2-week free trial, so there's no pressure to buy or anything like that. But it starts off with a Feel Better Now section. And in relation to kindness, because if you're suffering, it's really hard for you to be kind. So there's a breathing exercise and some meditations to help you feel better. And then more detailed modules on how to deal with stress, for example. There's a daily practice. And as we said, it's like a skill to learn. So asking a question of yourself or doing a breathing exercise to calm your mind down, giving you that extra pause. And then on the explore page related to this, so this is our pro, by the way, now we've got this new program on the app called Contact a Coach. So we can, you can reach out to people from around the world, and many of them are on this call. So there's Gopalan here. But this is our program called Pathway. So if you want to develop yourself into being an excellent human being, like learning a new language, I love that analogy, Martha. You start off with developing a calm mind, do breathing exercises and meditations, journaling, and so on. Then you learn the art of questioning your own mind. So what's inquiry, what's insight, what's awareness, how to develop your own self-awareness. And then you understand how your own mind works, like how you're conditioned. So if you've grown up without any kindness, and if you're aware of that, then that doesn't have to determine your future. Or how our mind is reactive, for example, or operates from self-interest, or our emotional needs. And then we have a section on understanding your emotions, including depression or loneliness. We've talked about that, or anger. And here you can then apply this to living your best life. So there's a huge module on communication, and many of the things we've talked about are here, but the module is in more detail. There's also right at the bottom a new module we've created on kindness, and how all the items that we've, many of the things we've talked about are here. There's an online journal and a list of guided questions, which then, because it's in asking yourself the questions that the transformation can occur. So there's, for example, a whole section on listening, and there's 11 questions you can go through. There's a community forum where you can talk to people, and so on. So I'm going to pause there and open it up to people for their comments. So
yeah, well, one thing we did not mention, and we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, Manoj, and that's that you have certain circumstances where one person is taking advantage of another person. And so then we ask, well, what does kindness actually look like in that case? And can I be in my integrity and still stand up to that person? And of course we can. And there comes a point in time where if someone is being using us, where the truthful thing is to stand up and say no more, but even that can be done in a way that we're not turning into the same thing, the same kind of bully that they might be being. We don't want to turn into that. So maybe another way of looking at kindness is that it's simply responsibility for our own actions in a way that, and we continue to act in our integrity, however that shows up.
Yes. And so you see kindness. We ask, what does kindness look like? And how does it feel like?
Yes, that's a good question, Gopal. And how does kindness feel? You know, I can remember so clearly the times in my life when people have been really kind. I mean, I'll just share one. My two-year-old son went for surgery, just a nosebleed, you know. And the surgeon was just kind of burning an artery in the nose. After the surgery, he called me. Manoj, it sounds absolutely fine. I've never forgotten that. It was like 30 years ago, you know, because he didn't have to do that. But just he understood that as a parent, I would be anxious. And so he picked up the phone and called. So I made it a practice in my career. As soon as we were in recovery, I had always asked the patient, who's the person I can call and talk to? And I would call them and say, hey, so-and-so is absolutely fine. Because I knew that they'd be sitting and worrying, you see. Mm-hmm. So small kindnesses like that just make such a big difference. Okay, Robin, what do you think about kindness?
I found this a fascinating conversation. Always love hearing my friend Martha speak about any topic. She's so clear. Oh my God. And has such wisdom. And to match her with Manoj, oh my God, I could just listen indefinitely. The thought that kept coming to me was kindness is just what we do and who we are when we are feeling love for ourselves and others. And one of the things I thought about was sometimes the kindness I show comes from that inner voice. It'll tell me to take an action. And that action ultimately is something that is kind. So last week I had my car fixed and all the lights were on, looked like a Christmas tree, took it to a mechanic, cost a lot of money to get it fixed, but it rode like new. So a few days later, I called him back and said, I know people never call you to thank you for what you do, but I'm just calling to say thank you. The car rides like new. And he said, you're right. Thank you very much. People never call me back. I tell you what, bring your car back in and I'm going to clean up your headlights so that the headlights look like a brand new car. The value, $300, cost me nothing just for being kind. And that's what I have to put out there. It's not that I didn't call him with the intention he's going to do something for me. I just called him. I called the guy who fixed my shower and did the same thing. It's just an appreciation for things that are done for us, or an appreciation for how somebody else is being, that then leads them to do other things. So, I mean, this guy will have my business forever with that kind of attitude and that kind of responsiveness. So this is a great conversation, and it's taking our societies in very different directions if we can just show love, be kind, from a place within ourselves, not necessarily to get something or to make something happen.
Thank you,
I
Robin.
Love what Robin said there, because you're leaning into that idea of it really matters. We genuinely, as we put kindness into our communication, kindness into the world, we're literally adding to the totality of goodness in the world, and that changes things. And that's wonderful that you saw such a great response. That's amazing. I love that story. We also can do things and we never see the goodness that comes out of it, but it does, because it's adding to the totality of goodness and kindness in the world. How can that not matter?
And you know, children instinctively have this already. We just need to draw it out of them. And this is my passion, that we need to bring this understanding into education. Susie, I'd love to have your comments on this subject.
Is there any one Susie on the call? Is that me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think I've been listening obviously intently, and I could talk about this all day, but I think that it's fundamentally about putting ourselves in the shoes of the other person, isn't it? And of course, as therapists, Martha will know this, you know, when you're with somebody in your therapy room, it's very much about getting inside their head and what does the world look like from their position. And of course, going back to the previous session with Mike Butterwick, you know, it does require a degree of self awareness and insight and compassion and humility to A, want to do that, but B, to appreciate that if you've ever felt that sense of anger or sadness or fear inflicted by another person, why would you ever want to be like that yourself? And so I think if you proceed on that basis, you can't really go far wrong. It's about saying, gosh, what does the world look like for that person? And making sure that however you deliver your messaging, your listening, or whatever you're doing for them, makes them feel safe and comfortable with themselves and the world around them. So yeah, and I'm a real toughie. I'm in the army, you know. So I work in a culture of toughness, but you know, so what? You know, I'm still spreading this message. It doesn't matter how senior you are. It doesn't matter what gender you are. You know, kindness is so motivating. And when I reflect on 30 years in the army, the best experiences I've had and the most productive I've been have been when I've been working with kind people. Mike Butterwick was a great example of that. So it didn't matter how senior he was to me, he would always treat me as an equal and say, Susie, what do you think? You know, and that's hugely empowering. It's really motivating, and it's really comforting to know that that person really values what I've got to say. So no, it's so important. So
and
important.
So many leaders miss that, don't they, Susie?
Totally, totally.
They
but I do also feel very strongly that this is something that we absolutely should be incorporating into the curriculum in education. I absolutely, and I've had these conversations with my daughter's school. I've brought Ruby up to believe that, you know, the first thing you do is be kind. You work hard, but you do it kindly. And so, yeah, through the challenges I've had with my daughter growing up, I've been working with the school to make sure that these lessons underpin all of the academic attainment and development. It's all about how we treat each other. And in so doing, we will perform better. So absolutely essential. I'd love this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Susie. Okay. I'd love you to share them if you could.
Okay. Well, the last one I shared is I'm a spiritual therapist, for those that don't know. In Colorado, no less.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And before that, I was a massage therapist. And one of the things that they taught us was to mirror communication, to make sure that you and your client are on the same page as far as the treatment. And I continue that in my communication outside of work too, and be like, this is what I heard. Did I hear that right? Or, okay, so you want full body and focus on this, just to clarify and make sure that we're on the same page. And I've found that it really helps people to feel heard when you can repeat back what you heard, right? Because you can send a message with your intention, but the way they received the message and the way they compute it are going to be two totally different computations, right? So being able to repeat it back and make sure that you guys are both perceiving the message in the same way, I find is a kindness, is a level of respect, but it's also a level of supporting and making them feel heard. And I don't remember what was one of my other comments.
You also had this comment on a softer body and softer eyes, which I thought was beautiful.
Yeah, so you guys were asking about what it looks like. What does kindness look like? It's a soft body, not a rigid, stiff body, right? It's softer eyes, a softer gaze onto the person, right? Because a kindness is more gentle, right? So there's a gentleness about it. There's, you know, when you're focused, you can tell when somebody's focused with their face, right? It's a softer muscle when you're speaking. When you speak with a harsher tone, your lips are tighter, your tongue operates differently, your cheeks are tighter. When you're kinder, there's a softer and gentleness about it. And so to me, that's what it feels like. That's what it looks like. So that was
thank you.
My take on
and
it.
We've got thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this afternoon on this wonderful discussion. I've learned so much from this. And I think for me, the takeaway has been, it's like learning a new language of kindness, just like you'd apply yourself to learning French, you know, you practice with intentionality and so on. And so kindness is not something that comes instinctively to human beings. Well, quite often it doesn't. I'm not saying it never does it. But it's something we all can develop as a skill, and this can nourish our lives in ways that, and the lives of others that we don't even know, and has a ripple effect in the world. So it's certainly something we should all aspire to, and a gift we can give ourselves, because it's a glue that holds our relationships together. It banishes our loneliness, and it can also help us flourish at work. I mean, Susie had this point that she still remembers the person who was really kind to her, and she would do so much more for that person than for anyone else. Martha, do you want to sum up before we close today?
I was thinking, what came to my mind as you just spoke was that I think as children, we do come into the world open and ready to be kind. And you see little children with little pets, and they, as long as they're treated well, they will have this natural kindness about them. But we have experiences, and we learn that the world can be harsh, and we learn that we can be injured, and we become more protective of ourselves. And the more protective of ourselves we become, the more we close ourselves off to others, and the less kind we become. And so it's just being aware of what's happened to me over my life. Am I turning into the person, growing into the person I want to be? So it's that self-awareness. I really took from what you said, Manoj, that business of give a minute, before we respond, so that we're intentional about our response. We're not just popping off with the first thing that comes to our mind. And I think we've talked about kindness doesn't always look kind. Sometimes you're having to say a hard thing, but you can still say a hard thing with understanding, with trying to reach into the other person kindly. You can still say a hard thing kindly. And I guess maybe to the end of it is also, you've mentioned, it matters in a big, big way. Maybe we haven't, maybe that's not been something that we've seen expressed a lot in the world, but it does matter. It matters to us and it matters to everyone around us, and it's worth paying attention to.
Yes. I was also thinking, you know, just there, that we all sit and moan about the state of the world, mm-hmm. forgetting that we can do something right now ourselves, mm-hmm. which is begin with kindness to our, mm-hmm. by the way, we haven't talked about that, but that's a separate discussion, kind to ourselves first, kindness mm-hmm. in all our communications, because that has a ripple effect and can heal the traumas of the world. And as Maya Angelou said so beautifully, people will forget everything about you, but they won't forget how you made them feel. And mm-hmm. kindness can do that. Wendy.
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Martha said, as far as sometimes you have to give them the hard message and you can still say it kindly. Going a little bit further than that is that even when you say that kindly, and I think about my mother with this, she will still react harshly, mm-hmm. even if I say it kindly. And so the kindness then becomes allowing her to process her emotions and get past the emotional stage so that we can then have a logical conversation when she's done. And so I think that's another level to it. It's just, even if you're doing the best that you can do and you're being as kind as you can be, they're mm-hmm. still gonna have their process.
Yes.
And so being kind is allowing them to have their process.
Good point.
Then coming back and revisiting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that, Wendy. Okay. Well, we've gone well past our hour. So thank you, everyone from around the world who's joined this call, and to Martha Van Dam, and for another wonderful conversation. This will be on the app in due course, and you can listen to it again there. So thank you and have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you.